You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Our capabilities are growing to support the range of features that our clients want to make available to their customers.
Welcome to FinTech Fun. FinTech Fun is a podcast where Australian fintechs come to share their stories.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here as part of the FinTech Fun podcast series. I'm with Caleb Gibbons, co-founder of Cache. Cash. What's the best way to pronounce it, Caleb?
Oh, I call it cash, like money.
Yeah. Perfect. Cash. Let's run with cash. That's easy for me to remember. Cash. Let's talk about the history, the origins of cash. A little bit about yourself and how the business began.
Sure. So I founded Cash 3.5 years ago. I left a career in funds law to start my own investing app and fintech business. So we first built our own micro-investing app, which connected with a debit card. It was real-time liquid, cloud-based. It's going to take over the world. But about 12 months in, I worked out that I'm not great at marketing investment products and I'm way better at building them. And we had a couple of I had a few friends actually come up to us and ask us, how do we build it? What was the license? What was the infrastructure? And I was helping them design other investment apps. And it kind of hit me a bit late, but rather than helping them out on the side, we could just run an investing service for them. And we did a pivot. We closed down our B2C. And ever since then, we've been running a range of investing apps under alternative brands to help other people put investment products in the market.
And Caleb, that idea, where did you get that from? Was it the timing of the market? Was there a gap that you identified? Because there's a number of other fintechs around the place that started their life doing similar things and then pivoted to helping a wider audience and a greater TAM. But what was the instinctive sort of feel for you early on?
Well, the core of the business hasn't really changed. Like we're on a mission to help more people invest, many for the first time. And I think we started the business thinking we would create a low barrier to entry micro-investing product that was real-time liquid. It was on a mobile. It connected with a debit card, gave a bit quasi-banking services, quasi-investment services. And we thought, this is a really great entry-level product to help more people start investing. And the opportunity, of course, is that only about 1 million people trade on the ASX every year. And we got 25 million people in the country. And so even if you think just the adult population, you know, more than 95% of people don't invest their money, and they probably should be. I think investing is a good behavior for most people, even if it's just learning how to start putting away money and building it over time. And so we built a micro investing app and service to meet that need. But ultimately, building one micro investing app is not going to service a broad market. And the chances that we happen to be the best marketing machine in the market are pretty slim. So rather than doing it ourselves, powering a range of digital investment products that all target different demographics with different brands, different mandates, gives us the opportunity to meet that need in a much, much broader way, touch a much larger group of people, and ultimately achieve that mission more comprehensively.
Absolutely. And do you think the barrier to entry of those million people you mentioned is firstly the minimum amount, or is it the awareness of what's happening or the education process? And what are some of the companies that have dealt with you done to solve that problem to increase the wider audience of share investment?
I think there's a range of things that are barriers to entry to investing. I think if you go back 5 or 10 years, the experience was terrible. Like the minimum investment size was 2 or 5 grand. The fees were prohibitively expensive, probably starting at $100 a year and going up to 1,000 or more. You know, the interfaces were probably paper-based. If not paper, then you'd be on some kind of broking platform that's scary and confusing. So it was all just terrible. And in the last, say, 6 to 8 years, there've been a range of new investment platforms, whether they be micro broking or micro portfolio products or other entry-level investment products have entered the market, and they've just broken down those barriers pretty comprehensively. Everything from low amounts to get started, a lot you can get started with like $5, to low fees. Some of them charge like a few dollars a month to get going. Also simplicity of product. A lot of them are really simple ASX 200 type products or growth fund type products where you don't need to pick stocks. And so all of those barriers to entry have come down. I think we power micro investing portfolio products primarily, and we power now 7 out of 11 products in the market. And so a lot of our clients are really targeting those low barrier to entry initial investment demographics. And for example, Spriggy Invest, Spriggy are our parents, fintech who service parents with pocket money and their children, and Spriggy Invest is an investment portfolio to help parents start investing for their kids. Similarly, we've got Upstreet, which is a share reward platform that helps people start investing by getting stock back in their favorite companies when they shop. But across the board, they're all helping people who wouldn't traditionally have taken that $5,000 and put it into the market and help them start their investing journey.
And let's talk about Cash, the product itself, the platform, and how it works. If I was to go and start a micro investing app called Chris Invest, for instance, and then I come to you and I say, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to allow people to invest in the ASX or an ETF for as little as $5. What magic then do you do, and how does it all work?
Yeah, so structurally what we do is create unit trusts which are structured like a registered managed fund effectively, and that allows us to issue units to investors in any fraction that we want. And once that money comes into the fund, we can then deploy it in broader strategies, which allows us to get over the minimums required for an individual because we do it in aggregate. In terms of the services we provide, like there's a whole stack of services required to launch registered managed investment schemes. And we provide a full stack solution that effectively aggregates, you know, 5 or 6 AFSL holders all playing their own part into a package that allows our client to put their product in a market efficiently without needing to build like a full wealth business in the back end.
And Caleb, in terms of the business itself, and since you came up with that idea to build your own app, can you describe how the business has progressed and some of the feedback that you've got from clients and the features that you've built out?
Sure. So obviously we started with our own app and then we pivoted to support other apps into market. As we've grown, we've basically captured every new micro investing portfolio product in the last 2.5 years. And we've now grown to 7 out of 11 in the market. We have a series more in our pipeline that are coming to market, each with their own spin. Some are existing companies looking to launch second products to their customers, other brand new, some are niche with particular investment strategies, others are broad. And the features that we're offering to our customers are growing as our customers demand them. So things like new payment integrations, real-time liquidity, real-time withdrawals, different reporting capabilities, different performance management capabilities, different billing capabilities. Some of our clients do performance fees, others do subscription fees. You know, our capabilities are growing to support the range of features that our clients want to make available to their customers.
And in regards to the total addressable market, which you mentioned, is almost every adult and even children when it comes to things like Spriggy over time. And I know minors can't invest in their own name, but certainly the parents can assist them from that. But broadly speaking, in cumulatively numbers amongst your clients, how many customers are sort of under the Cash roof?
Yeah, I think our numbers are pretty tied to particular customers at the moment, so we don't disclose them on aggregate. But I would say that the market for Australian micro-investing accounts is currently around 1.8 million. We report on that quarterly, and it's been growing at 100% year on year for the last few years. In terms of the total addressable market, I don't know if every adult and every child is going to end up with an investment account, but I do see it hitting 5-10 million accounts relatively soon. The segment's only 5 years old and we're already hitting 2 million accounts. So I think those sorts of numbers are achievable. And for us as a business, we want to become the infrastructure that powers the vast majority of products in the market. And I think we're getting to that stage where we're picking up all the new products and we're effectively the biggest player across our clients. And we expect to cement that position over time and then hopefully, you know, become the dominant provider in this space.
And speaking of a dominant provider, I mean, look at the US market and the UK market. Can you talk about what some of the apps that are over there that have kicked off and then behind the scenes, any sort of competitors to you on a global front? And second to that long-winded question is the idea for you to be global eventually as well?
Yeah, so I think I'll take them in turn. I think there's a lot of micro-investing products overseas, particularly in the UK and the US. I think the US is the pioneer in this space. Some of the things about their economic environment or financial system make it easier. So they've got more fractional broking and they do stock lending, which allows broking to get quite cheap. And so you've got players like Drive Wealth who are very, very successful over there. In terms of players that provide a similar product to ours, there are a couple in the States and the UK, although they're not quite as progressed as we are. I think there are opportunities for a player like us in those markets. And those markets will grow like ours is. In the short term, I think we need to make sure we dominate Australia before we take that jump overseas. And I think there's a lot of growth in this market that we want to capture to make sure that we're that leader in that space. But obviously, international is an obvious next step. I think the question for us is just when.
Yeah, and speaking of which, in terms of putting your hat on in 12 months' time for the business, and you mentioned about putting your foot down here in Australia, you know, we repeat this interview in 12 months' time. Where do you see the business cash to be?
I'd say in 12 months, we'll hopefully have twice as many clients in market with much more than twice as many account holders. Hopefully, the market grows by 100% again, and we can grow by a lot more than that. I also expect that the different types of investment products will continue to diversify. I expect some banks will come in with their own generic get started investing products, a bit like CommSec Pocket. You'll also have niches. There'll be ethical and property and other niches for particular investment strategies that people want to pursue. And I think there's space for all of that in the market. I think there's a lot of different investment strategies that are available on the ASX or in other platforms. And the digital access to investment products is clearly the preferred access point for retail investors. So I'd expect that this market will continue to diversify and look a bit more like the traditional ETF or investment market over time.
And Caleb, that's the serious part of the podcast out of the way. Let's get to the fun stuff, mate. So what does Caleb do on the off time when there's an off button? Do you what do you do to wind down, or do you ever wind down?
Well, I've got two young children and they keep me pretty busy. So I got a 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, two girls, and they keep me very busy. And I like to spend some time with them when I'm not in the office. But other than that, I live in Manly. I like to surf poorly on the weekends when I can. Yep.
Where's your favorite surfing destination?
Locally or
choose anywhere, but locally, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Manly's a solid spot I can walk down. So I'm often at Manly if I can be. Yeah, so I think that's what I do, and also try and travel a bit with the family, you know, from time to time.
How's your knowledge on children's TV shows?
We don't like a lot of children's TV in our house.
There you go. Maybe there's a gap, or maybe it's just that the content is not so good. There's a Brisbane-based show, Bluey, which is kicked off and taken the world by storm. Are you a Bluey fan or not?
Not really, because like I was saying, we don't have a lot of TV around the house for the kids. But yeah, that's just not the way we roll.
No, that's fair enough, and certainly it's an ongoing topic in most parents' household regarding screen time and what to do. But what about traveling again? If you get going and you had an opportunity to get away, and now that I wouldn't say now that COVID's disappeared, it's certainly still prominent, but the ability to travel again, where would you head off to?
Well, we've got a couple of trips planned this year. Hopefully we'll get to the snow in Perisher at some point. And then later in the year, my mate's getting married in Spain. So my wife's trying to put together an itinerary around that. But being a founder, it's one of those questions like, how long can you leave your baby on the other side of the world?
Yeah, yeah. And the skiing, are you a boarder or a skier?
Well, I was always a boarder, but then I got married and my wife is a skier. And, you know, if you're a boarder constantly, you know, strapping in while your wife is, you know, zooming off down the hill, it gets a bit awkward. So now I do a bit of both and it depends who I go with.
And if I come down to Sydney, mate, and we grab lunch, where would we go?
For lunch? Yeah. I think our standard spot is Bowery Lane around the corner from our place in Circular Quay. But if you want somewhere more grungy, I think, you know, there's plenty of spots around.
Yeah, nice. Excellent. All right, mate. Well, thank you for giving us the update on Cash and the story behind it. I really congratulate you on what you've achieved thus far in that short period of time where the apps have appeared and you've grabbed that market share. And let's do this conversation in 12 months and let's see how you go in regards to growing out the platform. And I wish you all the best.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chris.
For more information on Sub11, jump onto our LinkedIn or email me, chris@sub11.com.au. Thanks for listening.
Listen to the Unfunded podcast brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.